All right, today we're going to be talking about Daredevil Born Again Season 2, Episodes 2 and 3, and why they're kind of approaching some of the best television that Marvel's ever made. All right, here we go. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work. This is a podcast and a video podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by myself, Kyle Schoenewill, and my longtime friend from work, Robbie Earle. We kick off today our coverage of Born Again Season 2, Episode 2 and 3 with our first impressions, our big takeaways of this episode. And to me, I have two major things I want to share, and then we're going to get into all the nitty-gritty details. One, it feels like a return to form. I don't want to beat this dead horse forever. We've talked about it so much on this podcast, but two things. Not only for Daredevil as a character, but I just want to put an emphasis on Marvel is cooking. In fact, I saw that if you go by Rotten Tomatoes scores, it's something like the last six projects have all had as high of a score as any era Marvel's ever had, including rivaling the 2017 era. You're missing out between Thunderbolts, Fantastic Four, this season of Born Again, specifically Wonder Man, and a few other things we've gotten here or there, they're just really cooking. This feels like great television, and I'll give you reasons why, but that was my main takeaway. I just loved it. My notes were in my hand, but my phone was away, and I was locked in.
Yeah. I don't even know if I would say a return to form in that, like, yes, I take your point on the Rotten Tomatoes front and just the general quality, but this feels...
I love what you're going to say.
This season in particular feels like a whole new thing. Like, I don't think that Marvel's ever made television like this. And before everyone thinks I'm like clickbaity here, I'm not commenting on whether this is better than any other Marvel television show that's ever been released. I'm just saying I'm watching that last night, and I remember a couple years ago we had this conversation about, like, why is it that there's something about Disney Plus shows that feels a little under what you would characterize as like a prestige show for like HBO, or even some of the kind of Apple TV shows that we've talked about over the last year or two.
Yep.
And again, I don't think that that's necessarily a purely qualitative analysis, because I think that it doesn't, like, WandaVision shouldn't really feel like that. And even Loki is kind of its own thing, although I think Loki 2 started moving more into that. But I was watching this last night, and this feels like a dream scenario for a Daredevil show. Like, everything that you ever would have wanted, that you loved in the Netflix version, I feel like, especially in these two episodes, is so present and so dialed up, but it's in the MCU in the ways that we talked about last time. Like, I was so locked into the drama, to the performances. Like, I loved the D'Onofrio stuff that we got here that was so kind of like... Candace was watching it, and she made a lot of Penguin comparisons, which inevitably kind of goes back to Sopranos comparisons. Like, all that stuff kind of holds its own weight, and it doesn't get bogged down or too, like, cartoonized by the superhero stuff. But it also, it fits perfectly alongside that stuff. And so I was like, especially episode two, which was directed by Benson Moorhead. I liked both of the episodes, I think, equally, although we'll get into it. But that episode is whenever I think for the first time since this show has been running, I felt like, okay, like, this is what I was really hoping for when I saw that Benson and Moorhead were attached to this project. Because the first season, like, even the premiere, we talked about, there was just a few things where it was really exciting and there were some big swings, but it didn't feel like it had that kind of, like, super, super steady hand on the wheel that you get in those Loki season two episodes. And even the first episode of this season, we both loved, but there were a few things here and there that I was like, this isn't like 100% dialed in at every level. But there were just a couple scenes in the second episode where it was like from the cinematography standpoint, but also from the pacing and the performances that were being drawn out and just like the themes, like from a writing standpoint. But then again, just like the overall feel that you came away with, like again and again, whenever it was doing the check-ins and the contrast between Matt and Karen and Wilson and Vanessa, it was just like, this is like, this episode is the best version of Marvel TV that we could be getting right now from the best like directors that I think Marvel TV has landed on so far. And I just like, I'm so excited to see where the season goes from here, because I thought this was a considerable notch up from even the first episode that we were both really into. End of rant.
I need to get an audio cue that just goes, let him cook, let him cook. That's what I want to hit. Like, or like the DJ do, 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 as you're talking. I love that you pointed that out, because I think emphasis on this, I don't want to start comparing this versus the Netflix stuff. I'm not trying to make it like some argument, but I do feel like there are a lot of ways they took what worked there and improved it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, honestly, it's an improvement over season one. And I think that it's shining a light on, oh, season one wasn't as good as it could have been, in a weird way. So like the city to me feels a little more lived in. Like, yeah. I know this is really dumb, but in the Netflix stuff, it does feel really pigeonholed to Hell's Kitchen, which makes total sense. But Hell's Kitchen is actually not that large in real life. You know, it's like it's less than a mile long. I like that you get a little bit of a glimpse of like Astoria, for example, going there. Yeah. Or Fisk talking about his global impact, which we'll get to in a minute. But then not only is the city lived in, the huge improvement for me over season one is what a lot of reviewers talked about. The side characters are improved. And let me just use an example of, really, from season one, all you know about Buck at all is that he is like a bodyguard assassin.
Yeah,
and almost have no time with him.
So him having a conversation with Heather, character in season one.
Yeah, having a full conversation where you're like, oh, he's kind of smooth, and you're getting to know him a little bit. I'm going to use Buck, Daniel, and Kirsten. Like, we now get to see Kirsten running the show, grabbing a baseball bat because she's afraid by herself, missing Matt. Then the interaction she has with Daredevil, and she doesn't know it's Matt. Like, I know more about Kirsten now than I did basically through the whole season of the first season. So it just, we'll get into all what worked and what didn't work. But overall, it just feels more lived in, and the side characters have more autonomy.
Yeah. And in that way, it does feel like the Penguin, you know, right? When you get these legitimate kind of vignettes and you get time for characters to breathe and to be invested. And even, I mean, we haven't even gotten that much with Kirsten outside of just her working on the case. Like, we had that little scene with her and Heather, but, you know, she did introduce Matt and Heather. So I like them digging into that and digging into how, you know, they're friends and they've experienced some of the same things, but have come out on totally different sides. Like, it's just the little glimpses. I think it's what we talk about so often with like economy of storytelling, you know, where it's like when you can have a scene do several things. And I think that they're doing that repeatedly, and they're doing it well, to where none of this stuff ever feels belabored, and you're not having those moments where you're like, I know that we need this, but I kind of wish that we could get past it because I'm a little bit bored. It's like they, again, from like a pacing standpoint, it works really well to still do the deep dive and keep it moving. And man, yeah, I was so, even BB, I think we've gotten so much more like useful insight into here. And finally, this is not really like a side character. This is, I guess, more a protagonist. But I just want to circle back to what I flagged last week about Karen, because I thought those concerns were totally gone in these episodes for me. Hmm. And I don't know if that was a performance thing or the way that she was being used, because even some of the things I was flagging last time that I might not want to see too much of, like her going vigilante, like that happened here, but even then it was in a way. Yeah,
she punched one guy who was trying to turn himself in a good way. I'm saying it wasn't like doing backflips and, you know,
I thought like Daredevil is recognizing that she's kind of being reckless and that she's out of her depth. It's not like I think it's being handled well. And you see where she's coming from because she's kind of always been reckless in that way and getting herself into those situations. And it's not as though you see her like busting out, some crazy kung fu moves.
Yeah, yeah. I thought it was better for sure. Okay, I want to get into it. We'll be right back with our segment called Friendly Feedback, What Worked and What Didn't Work, after a quick word from these sponsors. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. So we all know that financial stress is one of the biggest challenges of being an adult, and it can take a serious toll on mental health and relationships. Worrying about money often brings anxiety, lack of sleep, depression, and it's one of the leading sources of conflict for couples. I know in my marriage, Annika and I struggle with financial stress all the time, and it's personally one of our biggest points of contention. And so this month, we want to normalize the emotional weight of financial stress and remind people that struggling with money doesn't mean they've failed. Sometimes it's just about accessing the right kind of support. Well, BetterHelp wants to aid in that stress and anxiety you're feeling. Therapy isn't about financial advice. It's about managing the stress, the shame, and anxiety that can come with it. And BetterHelp can help you unpack your relationship with money, build healthier coping strategies, and feel less alone in the process. BetterHelp has quality therapists that work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed within the United States. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And they do the initial matching work for you so you can focus on your own therapy goals. When life feels overwhelming, therapy can help. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's Better, H-E-L-P.com.
I tell you what.
I tell you something.
I tell you what.
I gotta tell you something.
Let me tell you something.
I'm gonna tell you a few things.
What worked and what didn't work. These are a work in progress. These are a work in progress. We're rushing them to get them out. So give me some grace that some of these may change, but let me tell you something.
They say you can't rush perfection, but they're wrong.
What worked and what didn't work. I'm going to do some nitty gritty stuff right away. Yeah. I love getting a mention of Sister Maggie and at least clarifying that she's on sabbatical. So, okay, great. She's not part of the show. One little line. I love it. Again, feels tied in, not a huge deal, but now we know.
Since you dropped that, because I maybe we can swap off little small things that worked here and kicking back and forth.
Rapid fire. I love it.
The Bullseye costume.
Oh, yeah.
You know, okay. I love it.
Well, so is that like a comic accurate one? I've never seen him outside of what
essentially,
he dresses like.
Essentially, I mean, it's slightly less stylized, but I think it fits within this world.
Okay.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, the you know, you've seen it in the Colin Farrell portrayal with the bullseye like tattoo. It being on the like, you know, hood or cowl or whatever.
How about just the fact that he's back in a church? Now, it's not Matt, but we finally saw the inside of a church again.
Yeah, so I know. When that happened, I told Candace, like, well, now this feels like Daredevil.
Yeah, right. Kind of a clutch idea, I thought, by Fisk to turn Matt into the hero that we need to go find.
Yeah.
And then on a bigger picture level, it just kind of... What the Netflix stuff did so well was this growing tension and this growing hopelessness of no matter what we do, he's got his fingers tied into something and we can't get away from it.
Yeah.
And I love that I'm starting to feel that again. I felt that with the trial in episode 3. I felt that with little things like that, like making them a hero and having the city seek after Matt for him. Always the one step ahead thing. You feel it again when he blows up the boat at the end of episode 3.
Yeah.
The judges, right? Feeling like they can't rule, honestly. The whole monologue from Jack, which I cannot wait to talk about Jack in a second.
Yeah.
It just is that feeling again of like, oh yeah, like there's nothing we can do.
I also love that unlike the Netflix stuff where we're so often seeing like kind of the, like Fisk is rising, Fisk is sort of its looming presence, or Fisk is like coming back like up to the top after a fall. Like I think season one did so much great like table setting. And I love how now we're not only getting a ton of great Daredevil stuff that I want to talk about, but we're getting such great like established Kingpin, Wilson Fisk. Like he is kind of a known entity. Even people that support him, it's sort of understood. Like there are scenes that because of that feel straight out of a Daredevil comic where you kind of just get some character flashes. Like even the fight training scene when the guy's like kind of his coach is sort of taunting him and trying to motivate him and he just like slams him into the glass wall. Like that feels like a panel out of a comic.
It
because
did.
we know
the
enough
glass
about
breaking
Fisk.
With the blood on it.
Like it's kind of stylized, but it's also like that does make sense. He is like a dangerous, violent, very strong guy, and you only see glimpses of that here, but it's deployed really well.
Him saying that he wants global impact, and Vanessa saying, "Well, how many worlds do you have to conquer?" And him saying, "How many are there?"
Yeah,
is so good. Great dialogue writing. But I also wonder if that's going to be the hint, the foreshadowing of the ultimate plan by the end of season two. What I wonder if he's going to step down from mayor because he feels like he could go even more, like he could go bigger.
Yeah.
He could do more, not as mayor. Like after, because like, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on the governor coming in, even in the first episode, obviously like the oversight, and he has to kind of move some things to make that happen. I wonder if he does the mayor thing well and then says to Vanessa, now we can go even larger. If I'm not in office, we can do everything we want to do.
Yeah. Like, I mean, there's also the kind of real power in the shadows element there that I can see him leaning into.
And that's what I mean. Not he's going to president or something. I mean, step into a different role. Okay. We talked so much in the first season about how there's all of these vigilantes and we're anti-vigilante, but you don't really get to see a ton of that, like the effect of that. You see Hector in the trial for a little bit. You see Muse for a split second and then he's dead. So I love that we got to see Jack finally kind of be Jack, like a significant upgrade over anything we got in the first season.
Yeah.
And Angela hinting at this White Tiger thing, which is really exciting for any fans of Spidey and His Amazing Friends, the show on Disney. What was it called? Disney Kids or whatever. Wow. Okay. The final fight. So cool with Jack. I'm going to talk about how it's cool from a filmmaking perspective, but just to see Jack actually do some stuff. His dialogue, I thought for me, was fantastic. I think it's because he centers the MCU-ness of it for me. So that's why I'm extra passionate about seeing those tie-ins, I think.
Yeah.
But still, just I'm picturing like Jack in Hawkeye, who's kind of like joking around with these low-level guys too. Oh, now he's in jail. He might be killed. This is going to be a serious thing. And then to see him fight and break out of it and help people out of it and stuff. And his monologuing during the trial felt very like, this is how democracy dies, with thunderous applause from Star Wars prequels. You know, that's what it felt like. And I loved it so much.
Yeah. It was such a great, again, a great blending of the parts of Jack that we've seen. And, you know, I think Hawkeye, having just rewatched it, I do think sometimes that like we remember it as goofier than it is, but Jack is fairly goofy in that show. And so I think
he's definitely trying to be like the mysterious, like, you know, we don't know what's going on, but it's leaned into the goofy side of it for sure.
But I think it works there because he's kind of playing the stepdad. He's not in any sort of like, and you know, he's a rich guy and he's kind of naive in that way. And I think that still comes through here where you still recognize like he's uber wealthy. He is kind of used to being somewhat untouchable, but you also learn stuff like he's a philanthropist and has donated a ton of money to good causes. And so you kind of recognize like he's not just this like kind of rich buffoon that is really good with swords.
Yeah.
So I think they did I feel now like this is a character that I can take seriously, even though I think Tony Dalton still adds little bits of like fun and flair to where he's not, it's not like he's suddenly like turning it into a whole new, like really gritty character. It still feels like that can be the same character that was introduced in Hawkeye in 2021.
And when I say the MCU-ness of it, I'm talking about also that dynamic. Because I've always felt like the MCU has handled the superhero stuff better than Netflix ever did. Netflix, yeah, they nailed the grounded stuff. But if you go back and watch Jessica Jones, sometimes when they're trying to have her show her super strength, it's a little wonky looking. There's some, it feels so almost out of place at times in that show.
Right.
So to see Jack and White Tiger, or at this point, Angela, I think that's the best of both worlds, because it's such a grounded Sopranos drama, as you say, but there are superheroes in it. Daredevil does have the ability to throw batons and hear watches from a room next door.
Yeah.
But to see the swordsman actually, oh, he's a good fighter. And Angela can help, and she's wearing the amulet, so maybe eventually it's going to come, like the talking animals thing.
Yeah.
I just think that's where it's the nice balance, because Jack represents that for me. Like, oh yeah, it still is a superhero show. Thank you.
I think that because you're bringing up the superhero side of it, this is going to be, I guess, maybe my hot take of the episode. I think that this is my favorite Daredevil action that we have gotten to date as a fan of Daredevil comics, as a fan of the Marvel comics character, recognizing that like there are so many great
the breakout scene.
Yeah. Like the original Netflix series, what was so great about those fights, like the hallway fights, is it was almost like a John Wick sequence where it's just kind of this guy that is he refused to yield, and he's so driven, and he's going to march through all these people, and there's something like so badass and cool about it. But it's more focused on
what comes to mind with those famous ones are the first season hallway where he's not even wearing a Daredevil suit yet. It's just the action. And then the final one in season 3, in the penthouse, which is a little bit, again, one of the best scenes ever, but it's a little bit wonky looking because it's all lit well. It's very like, you know, guys are throwing like knives and diving again, over the dinner table. And then the other one is the
costume.
And the prison breakout in season 3 is the other famous kind of oneer. Yeah. But again, not in costume, and Matt's very beat up. Like he's already kind of down and injured. So there aren't that many. Like so far in this season, we've already gotten like 4 action sequences in costume. The coolest looking costume he's ever had, by the way. I just went back and looked up the season 2 costume from the Netflix stuff. This is so much better. It's so much cooler.
Sure. Yeah.
It's so much cooler. Yeah. I forgot how much cooler it is. But yeah, like the dread of it and the action. So anyway, sorry. Yes, not to hijack it. The action.
No.
I don't think it's that hot of a take to say they kind of took the oneer thing that they did so well.
Yeah.
And did that here, but now infused a little bit of whimsy from the batons and from Jack while also saving people and it being a practical thing in suit using like the smoke. It's up there with some of the best action sequences they've done.
I mean, when I think back on those great sequences from the Netflix seasons, I feel like there's a lot there that it's like a, you know, some of those Winter Soldier choreographed fights where it's like it works so well, and you kind of have Matt in that Steve Rogers role or like Natasha role where he's just this like elite fighter, but he's a guy, you know, and so like that's part of the stakes are there because he's just a guy, he's not super strong or whatever. But I think that what I like about what they're doing here is they are leaning into every aspect of what makes him Daredevil, both like on the acrobatic side, but also you get so many different little moments of him hearing something and zeroing in on it and reacting, or you get these moments where it's like you see the like whatever you call them, AVTF, like thugs. Like you see them and then there's all the kind of fog and you don't see Matt and then you just see the batons like come out and hit them and like...
Right, he's not just a guy, which is kind of cool.
There is some... It hits that kind of Batman Begins thing we talked about from the first episode where it's like he is intentionally trying to create a mystique and a persona in a way that we haven't really seen Matt do before. And I like that because he does need to, like, there is a, like, the common ground between him and Batman is that he's just a guy that, like, has this part of his face covered. So he does have to create distinct personas and make it very clear that, like, he has a different voice and he has a different, like, different mannerisms. And so even... like the fight on the one hand, I think there is so much kind of like theatricality and deception to it. But then also the, like in the interrogation scene, in the interrogation scene at the start of episode 3, when he's like, you're lying, you're a liar. And then he turns to Karen, like, he's actually not lying, by the way.
Yeah, but also, have we ever seen Matt be bad cop? I took a note. Is that the first time I've ever heard him use language?
Maybe. Yeah. Well,
he says, listen, you F.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I've never heard him kind of be like that kind of bad cop with someone.
I
mean,
but again, I think what I like about it is it's an intentional role that he's stepping into. And I like seeing him step out of that and the side note to Karen because... yeah, it does make sense that he wouldn't want, like, one, it's an advantage of his that people don't know that he can tell when they're lying, because then he can get people to like, give him information, and he always knows it's accurate, but they don't know that. And then, on the other hand, it's just like, yeah, I like that he's kind of throwing the guy off balance, and then there are these little moments in this episode, and we saw... there were like shots of this in some of the trailers and I couldn't quite figure out like how it was going to land, but it lands so well in context. Like whenever he's fighting the guys in Josie's and he grabs the gun and like swings the light up to them and it's like for a second they think he's going to shoot and you see him smile and then just like shoot at the ceiling. And there's something again, like I think that's the first time that we've gotten outside of like She-Hulk that we've gotten like a... like smiley
smile
daredevil.
That's so funny to say,
but it works in a way where it's like kind it's disconcerting, which is I think how he means it to be. Like he's trying to create a sense of fear to almost like counter what Fisk is doing. So instead of it just being like I'm the totally good guy that's just like rock solid, like he is trying to freak out some of these task force guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right. By the way, on the action sequence, him doing all that extra superpower stuff was so cool. The listening, like hearing, like shoot to kill. Then he goes like, everyone get down beforehand. Yeah. And you're so right. When I think back on the Netflix stuff, and I'm sure we're missing some, I don't remember that aspect as much. I remember a lot of cool fights where he's beating people up. I don't remember as much that use of dread, as much that use of his superpowers. It's so freaking cool. In episode 2, I really like that Daniel's kind of on to BB. Daniel has also taken a step up here because I know more about him. I know what he's trying to do. Mm-hmm. When Fisk is threatening him, I was actually scared. And then he puts the card in his shirt and he says, F and A? Like what? Like, are you going to kill me right now kind of thing? There's a little bit of this, oh gosh, even this guy that I'm protecting can literally kill me at any moment. So Daniel's a step up. This is going to be the dumbest thing I've asked on this podcast. Am I to understand that, just because I think I missed this detail, BB and Daniel are making the pro Fisk videos together on Daniel's computer, and BB is also using Daniel's computer to make the anti-
I think
propaganda stuff.
I think they're
because it's on his computer, right? He's like, oh, and why is it on his computer?
Well, I think they're making the like I think she probably has, my understanding, she has access to his computer because they're making the pro Fisk stuff
together.
And she just used her access to pull other stuff off of his computer that would help her with the like guerrilla stuff.
So she still made it at her house or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I think she just is, she's making him into a leak, which I think what I liked about Daniel here is they've been setting up since season one that he was going to kind of be this
protege of sorts.
Yeah. You know, it's like he's got, like, you see certain similarities, but one, I like that he is different. Like he's charismatic in a way that you don't really see Fisk being, and he's good at like kind of winning friends. And I loved the scene with him and Buck that you referenced earlier, but also I loved, and it was on the nose, but not too much. The scene with him and BB that feels so much like the early scenes in season one of the Netflix show when Fisk is kind of courting Vanessa, like when he's making this nice dinner for BB and the wine, and like it's, because remember there's that sign or that scene with Fisk where he's like, you know, I don't know enough about wine, but like Wesley tells me like this is the best, and it's almost the same. Like I hope that it's good. I don't know. It's very expensive.
Yeah,
it's like they're clearly mirroring, but I think it feels tailored to who Daniel is, and I love that like he knows that she's leaking, so it's not this thing where he's like missing the obvious thing.
I think he genuinely likes her.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just like there's something really refreshing about that kind of like there's a version of that scene where he's like, look, if you know who this is, you have to tell me. And she's like, I swear I don't know. And he's like, okay. And you're kind of like, as the audience, knowing like, well, obviously it's her. I like that he just immediately reaches that conclusion. And they just kind of have this conversation where he's like, I think it's you. You should stop. Because if you don't, you're going to get hurt. And there's something very like Fisk-like about that honesty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Benson and Moorhead only directed episode 2. I don't think they're directing anything else the rest of the season, is my understanding.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like episode 3 was, you know, still really, really great. Not a commentary on that, but just little things I caught. You brought this up in the first impressions section. Little things like the really cool parallel of Matt and Karen laying next to each other, while cutting back and forth between Fisk and Vanessa laying back to back. I thought that was really great. I love how with Bullseye they use that use of blue and that buzzing sound.
Yeah.
So whenever it goes blue, it's kind of showing he's losing it. This is him going dark, essentially, going into this other mode, and they've stuck with that. Even the touch of Vanessa when she's terrified having her dream, the flower is blue in the night, and then when she wakes up, it's actually a red flower. But when she sees it in that dream. I love that they're putting this emphasis on all of the characters are haunted by their pasts. So like, obviously something's going on with Heather, right? They're starting to make her into like a maniac. And I know apparently, I don't know, some theories are that she eventually is going to be Muse. It's crazy to me that if she's not going to be Muse, that she's keeping his mask for some weird reason, like time to move on, girl.
Yeah.
So something's definitely going on there. You know, she's been struggling with this haunting of what happened with Muse, et cetera. But now you're starting to see Vanessa having bad dreams about Bullseye. You're starting to see some other people starting to wrestle with past decisions. That's kind of a unique thing. Like Matt being paralyzed in the fight because he hears Foggy's heartbeat and then sees that. It's all this past stuff, which again, retroactively puts more emphasis on season one. So it's kind of a best of both worlds, because if you rewatch this years down the road, you can say during season one, oh, that's going to come back. Like just keep paying attention, because that all matters. The knife, like little details that they were sure to make sure were correct. The knife, not just saying you're welcome on it, but it's engraved, so Matt could feel it. So they show that Matt's running his fingers on it.
Yeah.
Things like that, where it's like, I saw someone say, well, why would Bullseye write "you're welcome" on a knife when he knows Matt can't read it? Well, there's a little bit of texture on it now. It's not just. So I just feel like they're in touch with a lot of this stuff. Like they bring the filmmaking kind of gravitas to it while still the whole show really understanding the source material and where we came from, not just with Netflix, but also with Born Again season one.
Yeah. I mean, even explaining why Fisk wouldn't just out Matt, which is, I think, something that like, in the comics is addressed by Fisk just wanting to always, like, he wants to be the one that has that on Matt. Like, if everybody knows it, then he kind of loses a certain edge. But I think here, like, I like the way he talks through that. I like that he addresses that scene at the end of season one. Like, they're kind of coalescing certain threads into, like, a narrative that makes sense of really everything up until this point. Again, like, I think this applies to a lot of areas of the show, but I think in terms of the characterization of Fisk and Matt's relationship, and like the big thing that I just thought worked so well here and was really showcased in what you're talking about, like the cutting and like the cuts to Matt and Karen and back to Wilson and Vanessa, but really throughout these episodes, you see like Matt and Fisk kind of playing this chess game. And I really like, I like that you can't quite tell who's coming out on top. Like, it's not this, like, yes, you have this sense of like the inevitability of Fisk that's sort of oppressive, and you see that come through in key moments.
But Matt breaks some people out and kind of gets to him.
And
Fisk blows up the boat.
It's this constant escalation of like, okay, Fisk, like Matt creates problems for Fisk. Fisk manages to turn that into a win for him, which then Matt responds to and like creates additional problems. And you just see that they are like kind of evenly matched in a way that I think elevates Daredevil beyond, again, just the kind of like, I am the good guy and I'm against Fisk because he's the bad guy. Like, you see that they can think about things similarly, even down to like the trial. We don't see Matt operating as a lawyer, obviously, but I like that you get little glimpses of his commentary.
Yeah, that he's watching.
And like, yeah, and he's frustrated and he's kind of like playing lawyer in his brain. And then you kind of, it's a reminder that, yeah, because it does make sense that he and Fisk would be kind of intellectual matches too, because Matt's supposed to be like one of the best lawyers in New York City. So he would be like a smart, strategic thinker. And would be able to kind of both go. So it's like Matt and Fisk are evenly matched in the same way that Daredevil and Kingpin are.
Yeah, right. Okay, three other rapid fire things, then we'll get into the greater MCU-ness of this all. This is so dumb. I love how Red Hook looks, and I feel like it looks identical to any of the bases you find in the Spider-Man video games. You know, when you go like the port bases and there's guards standing out and there's a gate and stuff, it looks identical. So shout out that. But I also think on a more serious note, it does expand New York, as I mentioned earlier, in general, and Fisk's reach to the whole city. Secondly, I like the line that Matt says, you're starting to sound like Frank to Karen. And I kind of like this parallel that Karen is starting to go, he is effective. Like it does kind of work. Again, it's that age old discussion. Matt, we love that you believe in the law, but Fisk is murdering thousands of people at this point, or hundreds of people, while you're figuring out the law part of it, you know?
Right.
So it's the, if you just killed him, does this whole thing fall apart? And if it does, is that worth it? Cause all those people on the boat just died and lost their families. So, you know, and Karen's like, well, you know, Karen's starting to sound like Frank, which is why I think they should be together. And then my last rapid fire thing, I said this earlier, I thought the hot dog scene with Daniel and Buck was actually really good, just because, again, Buck was such a robot in the first season. Not the actor's fault. Just he didn't have much to do other than shoot a person here or there, step out of a shadow and say, you're welcome or something.
No, it felt like...
And then the Heather thing, too, with him. It, like, really humanized him to hear him talk to her and, like, kind of, put on the charisma, the charm with her a little bit. And to hear him say he likes Daniel as an example and to kind of give his profile of everybody, but also the fact that he did try the hot dog and not like he wasn't just a robot. He took a bite of it. I just thought it took a big step forward. So,
yeah, no, I think that like he was one of the characters that I think kind of the way a lot of people felt about using Cherry over like Mahoney. I think I felt that he was just kind of a poor man's Wesley the first season, mm-hmm. like just kind of nondescript and British, so that he would maybe seem like slightly more sinister or something. And yeah, I really like here that you kind of see, I mean, even in the first episode, which we didn't really talk about at the time, but that scene where he's like kind of chastising the task force guy for the way he's handling the interrogation. And you see that he's got like
Powell,
I think. Yeah. But then at the end, you know, he still shoots the guy in the back of the head, but you see that he's kind of not like he is coming at this from a different angle. Like he's not sadistic in the same way that some of the other people that work for Fisk are. So they are creating some nuance there too. And yeah, man, I
think to this point, Wesley was a better character than Buck to this point, I think.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. But
now I think it's kind of changing.
Yeah. It's just they're different now too. Like I think Wesley was defined by his just like relentless loyalty to Fisk. Like you didn't really see any motivation for him outside of making Fisk happy. Mm-hmm. And now I think that was fine. Like I think that worked really well there. But here you see that he may have different motivations. And even that conversation with Heather about like, mm-hmm. are these like, are you recognizing that you're kind of surrounded by the people that are capable of doing you in? Mm-hmm. Like rather than just like him being a totally loyal soldier.
All right, we'll be right back with our final three segments after a quick word from these sponsors.
Went forward in time to view alternate futures. To see all the possible outcomes.
It's so
I love
dumb.
It. I love it. I love it. I love that I love that I don't have any heads up.
Again, we're working on it. Just following up, how does this affect the MCU at large? And honestly, I don't hear this being a super long segment today just because
no.
I don't think we got a ton more indication other than I like the anti-vigilante trials. Like we're seeing what this looks like
yeah.
and how that could eventually maybe spin into, you know, Spider-Man mm-hmm. or one of the other Avengers or Thunderbolts or whatever, something like that. Jack Duquesne being tied in. I feel like, Robbie, bold prediction, I do think we're going to get some, I may be changing my mind. I think we're going to get a juicy cameo. I think wow. something crazy is going to happen that they're holding. I don't know any. I have no indication of this. I just know that reviewers who watched the whole season, which again we chose not to, they're freaking out about the end of this, and it, like I know it can get better than episode 3 for sure. But I'm also thinking like what could be so much better? Like what right. could get this moving so much?
Right.
Than if they're maybe holding off on something big. And I don't think just Luke Cage. Like maybe I know, and something
still,
else.
I mean, they're still holding back Jessica Jones, which I think is great because I haven't felt that we needed that extra oomph yet. So I think that'll be fun when it hits.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think in terms of the wider MCU beyond that, I mean, we talked about the Jack Duquesne stuff. I like the little quick reference from the governor about Fisk using his CIA connections. Mm. One thing I did want to point out to kind of follow up on our conversation last week, I saw this on the Marvel website, and I think I also saw that Disney Plus has listed this somehow too. But at this point, they seem to be identifying season 2 as taking place after Thunderbolts.
I'm glad you brought that up. Which I don't know if I like yet, but let's just kind of wait. First of all,
they've also changed those things in the past.
That's exactly right. That's what I was going to say. First of all, second of all, is that the Disney Plus timeline has not always, like, is it fair to say that at times we've almost disagreed with it, where it's like, I see what you're saying, but I don't know if that's, and then thirdly, I don't necessarily know, we don't know yet how long this season spans. So is it possible that the beginning of this is prior to Thunderbolts? The middle of this is right when Thunderbolts is about to happen. And then technically, sure, the end of it is like a day after, maybe.
Because I mean, it's like Doctor Strange, you know, where it starts like around or pre-Civil War and basically goes right up to Ragnarok, if you kind of look at the official timeline. But yeah, I'm
just not getting too wrapped up with that yet. Like, I'm not going to freak out about it. In my mind, it's still easier for me to think that while this is happening, like, Yelena hasn't had this awakening yet, right? Like, they're not forming the Avengers yet or the Thunderbolts.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That it's easier for my mind to think that this is all kind of the backdrop of what's about to happen in Thunderbolts.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. And you know, either way, you can no-prize it. Like, I think you could say that Val, even if she is no longer formally associated with the CIA, would still obviously have connections there. And she's just, I think, defined by her connections in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I still would prefer to have it pre-Thunderbolts, even just thematically. But again, I am curious where it ends, because there are, like we've talked about a lot, like they have been setting up this Devil's Reign arc since season one that Chip Zdarsky wrote. And that is a very kind of, I mean, it's a Marvel Comics event. You have the Fantastic Four, you have Spider-Man, you have members of the X-Men, like you have the whole universe kind of getting involved to some degree. And I don't think we're going to get that much here, obviously. But if they kind of set anything like that up, then it will have to be somewhat timestamped within the MCU, just based on how characters are referenced.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, I want to circle back one more time to Angela and White Tiger. I know White Tiger from Spidey and His Amazing Friends, and White Tiger in that show has the ability to talk to animals and communicate with them. I bring that up just because, one, I'm fascinated to see if they ever flirt with that idea here. Two, you know, that's a lot more in like the Ant-Man vein, where you, like, up until this point, you know, Daredevil, Bullseye, Swordsman, these are still characters that are just really good at their one thing they're doing. It's not like, you know, like, it's a totally different tone if a bunch of tigers show up and start mauling people or something because Angela summoned them. But I would be intrigued to see how they handle it. Like, I'm not totally against that idea, by the way, for the record, because again, we're in a superhero world. I'm not totally against it, but that'll be something I'm kind of keeping tabs on. Like, does she not have powers yet? Does she need to grow up before this becomes a thing? Are they just planting this seed for another project where she's a part of like a Young Avengers or something else?
Yeah.
Or is it in this show? So as far as how that affects the greater MCU, I'm just kind of keeping tabs on it. We'll see.
Yeah, I do. I like, you know, going back to the very beginning of the show, I am sensitive to spunky kid characters. And I like.
You hate child actors, so we know that. Yeah,
I mean, just shouldn't exist. But no, I think that she's, like, that's being handled well. It's not taking us out of the kind of darker tone of the series as a whole in the way that it could. So yeah, I think I'm even the way she's kind of using the amulet and not really know, like, I like she didn't just like pop up in a full costume or something. Like, I think she's, it feels, and she had stakes, like her aunt was taken, you know, and so it's not just like she's like, like with great power, great responsibility, Angela.
Right. No, she's trying to break her out.
Right.
Okay. From a friend, let's hear from one of our Friends from Work Plus patrons. This week, it's going to be from Jordan. I want to say, check out Friends from Work Plus. If you like what we're doing here, it really helps support the show. Here is our segment called From a Friend.
We know each other. He's a friend from work.
obvious reasons there. Jordan says, and I like this question because we really haven't gotten into this yet. Jordan says, oh, thanks, Jordan, by the way. Thoughts on Matt continuing to conceal his identity from Kirsten, even after going to her for help as Daredevil. He's really putting her through it so far, leaving her to keep their practice afloat and making Cherry lie to her. And I love it. And I chose that question specifically because, man, if you chronicled the journey of this podcast, when we started in 2019, there was a lot of talk about how I love that the MCU just kind of did away with identities, hidden identities.
Right.
Literally in the first movie in 2008, Tony Stark says, I am Iron Man at the end. And it's kind of a way for them to be like, look, we're not going to really do this whole like, what if they know who I am?
Identities. Yeah.
And that was because the context was we had gotten so much of that with like the Tobey Maguire movies where at all costs, he's not even going to tell his girlfriend who he is for a long time because he has to protect her.
And Batman. So
the MCU kind of did away with that for a long time. I kind of love that we're back to it with some characters. It's just like with Spider-Man now, I kind of hope they don't reveal it immediately. And I kind of like that there's a new tension again with Daredevil that we just, you know, we didn't think about a lot with other MCU characters of he really doesn't want people to know what's going on. And I kind of love it. So even with Kirsten, like season 3 of Netflix, he's kind of screwing his friends. Like she's having to do a lot of extra work. He's still not going to reveal to her, even though he could trust her, I would think. So even in that scene when he says like, stay back, don't come over here. It's like, I think he doesn't want her to get real close and examine who this is.
I mean, you know, I was thinking about that. Like I'm talking about the kind of persona element, like that's risky because Kirsten's obviously talked to Matt a lot. He starts by calling her by
name. He says her name. Yeah. He kind of whispers a little bit more. So like Batman Begins, he kind of changes his voice a little bit.
But not a ton.
It's not like he's like, oh, hey, girl. Yeah.
Like, I would not be surprised if she, I mean, again, she's kind of drunk. She's obviously like.
The drunk thing might be important.
And she, you know, again, you always have to remember, like, Matt is blind. Everyone knows he's blind. So it would make no sense to ever think of him as Daredevil.
He's like, he has an extra layer of protection because. Yeah, even in the first season of Netflix, people are like, no way.
Yeah, like you can't. So I there are probably just kind of walls where even if she hears that he sounds like Matt, her brain probably wouldn't even connect those dots.
And because, she's drunk. Yep.
Yeah. But I do think like, yeah, that's it's risky. Like in the same way it would be risky to be Daredevil and be like talking to Foggy early on for too long. Like this is just someone that knows your voice and your tics and your mannerisms. And eventually I think it's why he stayed away and why, you know, he's keeping her away in that scene and in the shadows. But he is like, but I don't know what else he could do, right? Like if he brings her into it, he's now not only compromising her safety, he's also going to really prevent her from being able to do her job effectively. Mm-hmm. Like if he gives her too much insight, because she's now like having to, you know, juggle all of these other secrets when she should just be able to kind of effectively represent all of these, like I assume other vigilantes.
She although was great,
they've
by the
been
way.
Released.
Yeah. I thought she was great. I thought she was great. Like captivating in the trial sequence really won me over. I also loved her saying, look, I'm a little bit drunk. And I don't remember a ton of it. I had goggles on, so I only could really hear things. And he goes, oh, that'll work. With another smile, by the way.
I can work with that. Yeah.
And then the cutting to her talking about it. And then him seeing what she was talking about. Because I did remember, like I took note of that when she's being walked through the prison and has the goggles on. I remember thinking, I wonder why they're like highlighting that she's now stepping in water. Because I heard that.
Right.
And there's a little bit of wind now. Weird. And then they circle back on that and share that. I thought that was really cool.
And I love bringing back the ticking watch from the first episode, which was just like, again, it's just these with little the clever
aspect,
ways.
With the aspect ratio change.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I there were so many little moments in these where, and I'm not going to go into this because it doesn't relate to the question, but yeah, where they just really emphasize kind of Daredevil powers like that. And they were so fun.
Which is also fresh, by the way, because they never did the aspect ratio change thing in the first three seasons of Netflix. That's a new thing from Disney.
Yeah.
Okay, let's rank these bad boys.
What do you think?
What do you think?
Did it work?
Yes, I think it works.
Okay, so again, remember my scale. I want to be strict with my scale. I don't want to give out A's just because I love everything.
Right.
So last week I gave episode one a B. I'm going to give episode two a B plus and episode three a B plus for me. So better. I think episode three was not quite as strong as two until the ending. And then the ending surpassed anything from episode two. But I just have this feeling that there are going to be a few episodes that are like the ending of episode two kind of throughout, not just action, but I mean like where I go, oh my God, the whole time.
Right.
So I'm leaving room for an A minus still upcoming. So again, for me, two B pluses, I think both of them I liked more than the first one and we're a step up. So I'll say, I think I said 84. I said B or B minus last time. I think I said B minus. I'll go B plus and I'll go like 89 for both of them for me.
I swear I'm not doing this on purpose, but I also had B plus. In fairness, I was ranking them together because it's hard for me to like reviewing them together and watching them together. I'm worried that I'm mixing certain scenes up. But yeah, I felt the same. I mean, for all the reasons we discussed last time, like I feel like there is room to go up from here, but not to fix any quality issues, if that makes sense. Like,
for sure.
I think it stands on its own as just great. Like, these are great episodes. And it just makes me curious, like, what the ceiling is. Because it seems like, from reviews, that there are more surprises to come. I know, if you haven't checked it out yet, I talked about this last week, but we have a written review of the full season, spoiler-free, that Greg Arnold put out for The Water Cooler, which is part of our newsletter. And I know Greg has highlighted episode 5 as his favorite of the season. So
where I'm going to be a little bit biased is I've always been biased towards the MCU-ness of it, the Avengers-ness of it. And so if there is an episode, I'm just going to be honest, that does all of that and then drops like a massive Avengers reference, or Yelena shows up, or Bucky shows up, or Spider-Man shows up, or there's a really intense reference to that. If something like that were to happen, I'm going to be biased toward it. I'm going to be like, that's, let's go A minus, like, you know.
If Spider-Man showed up.
I'm just saying, if something were like, if they're sitting on something crazy, I'm going
to
be
biased. It's just so, it's so frustrating to me because like there are, like,
here we go.
Like, for instance, the Batman. I love the Batman. I am never watching the Batman thinking, you know what we need here? Superman. Because that would like totally ruin it. It doesn't work at all. The Batman is great as it is because of how kind of singular they've made it. But okay, like, this is one of those things where it's just like, oh my gosh, it would make so much sense that if they don't do it in some way at some point, it's going to be the biggest missed opportunity in like Marvel Cinematic Universe history.
Again, if it was real life and there were no rights and Matthew is literally saying we need to put together a team, is it that crazy that he would then go, what about that guy that is always webbing people up and stopping crime? Can I find him? Like, could I go out some night?
He maybe remembers representing as a nameless person.
Right, like, can I, like, maybe I'll listen to a police scanner and start going to the same crimes that he might be at and see if I can talk to him. Like, don't you think that'd be real? And and if the Thunderbolts, if this takes place after Thunderbolts, so now Val has put out an actual press conference saying these are the new Avengers. Don't you think Matt would go, what about that article in the paper about like Yelena or Bucky who's running for senator? Could I call him? He's in the government and he's a super soldier. Like,
yeah,
it
or
might
at least
be really
like
helpful.
Find ways for like Karen to get in touch with him the way she got stuff to the governor. And
So I'm not at like a breaking point with that yet, right? Like right. I'm not mad that it's not happening, but if it was real life, it seems like that would be the next logical step. So
yeah.
You just wonder if something like that's coming. Thank you for listening. I want to give one note as we close here. Next week, I will actually be working in Hell's Kitchen. Of all
love
places,
it. I love
in
the, Hell's Kitchen. The dedication is...
It's like you with France.
Yep.
It's like, we do what we can. I may legitimately, for the record, look up like the Red Hook port. Is that a real place that they filmed? And I'd love to like walk by there in my downtown.
Yeah, you should.
And just see if that's a thing.
Yeah.
The Red Hook port. Anyways, I'll be in Hell's Kitchen, but I can't watch the episode and record probably until Wednesday night. And then I might have slow internet. So just giving people a heads up, next week's episode, the only week like this, probably won't come out till like Thursday, you know, midday or something instead of Wednesday afternoon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting. Let's go drop your comments in the comment section. I want to hear from you on Discord, wherever you can. Let's talk about this thing. And we'll see you next week talking about episode 4 of Daredevil Born Again Season 2 right here on Friends From Work.